Right now, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people should be aware that the following story contains the names of deceased persons. But if you weren't around Town Hall the Saturday just gone, or if you were, you would have seen the Stop Black Deaths in Custody protest, with this Thursday marking 30 years since the Royal Commission into Indigenous Deaths into Custody. Despite time passing, little progress seems to have been made, with five Indigenous deaths in custody occurring in March alone. Here to talk to us about the issue today is Nerida Waite, CEO of the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service. How's it going?
Good, thank you.
So, first of all, thank you so much for joining the show. There have been over 470 Indigenous deaths in custody since 1991, yet no one has ever been held criminally accountable. For those that aren't all that well-versed in the legal system, can you explain how what appears to be a significant lack of justice has occurred?
Certainly. So the Ricky Dick report was handed down on the 15th of April 1991. Since that time, the vast majority of the 339 recommendations haven't been implemented, and instead, in certain territories, you've seen rather reverse and perverse rollbacks in the justice system, whether that be through bail, sentencing, or in Victoria, for example, we spend $950 million per year on prisons alone. What this means is that what we're seeing every day, day in, day out, hour by hour, is the continued incarceration of our people. Over the past 15 years, the numbers actually skyrocketed. So nationally, our people are 13 times more likely to be locked up. In Victoria, it's 15.5 times more likely. And Victoria has the highest death rate for Aboriginal people in prisons of all states and territories.
So
when you're looking at the human cost of it, it's extensive and inexcusable.
When we say deaths in custody, I think some of us wouldn't be all that aware. Is this, I don't know, how do these occur? Are they maybe individuals that have come in and already compromising health situations, or is there something as brutal as police brutality involved in certain examples? Like, what kind of constitutes or what leads to these people losing their lives?
So it is a broad-based term that basically covers any death that has occurred in the custody of the state. Now, most commonly they refer to deaths that have occurred in the custody of police or correctional officers. Sometimes that can range for somebody who has been remanded, say like Veronica Nelson, remanded for shoplifting, and then shortly died thereafter in Dane Phillips Frost. Can be as harsh as what we saw in the Northern Territory in WA last year and this year, where people like Kumanjai Walker sadly passed away in very tragic circumstances with an unreasonable use of force. So it's very broad-based, does cover a lot, but what we keep on seeing is more and more of our people die in custody because more and more people are entering custody. And a lot of that has to do with the way the justice system is positioned, its inherent systemic racism, our onerous bail laws, the fact that we invest more in prison than we do in programs that will help people, such as social housing, employment, education. We constantly invest in the wrong end and then end up in tragic circumstances.
So what might be some recommendations, I guess, to overhaul the system there? We see things like in WA, the three strikes, you're in legislation or the recommendations, which would mean essentially three, infringements. Before you would even, be subject to possibly being incarcerated, and then recommendations that kind of jail terms less than 12 months pretty much be wiped altogether. So do these kinds of things work? Can we see these around the country, or is it just, is it reflective of the fact that these things maybe don't work and we need even further overhaul to this system?
Look, there are certainly pockets of hope in states and territories in practices that we're seeing. Like if you look at what's happening in Bourke in terms of justice reinvestment, if you go into local communities where there is that focus on caution and diversion in partnership with police, you see significant change. But whilst these pocket hopes are great, what we need is a national response. What we need is to make sure that rather than spending $8 billion per year on Indigenous incarceration, which is what we're spending, we put that into Aboriginal community-controlled organisations and prevention programs, we put that into housing, education, employment, all of those social supports that are needed to give somebody a chance at a real life. Because if you're homeless, if you don't have a job and you don't have any help to get there, then you're most likely to be committing crimes out of desperate poverty, such as, you know, stealing food. You know, and then even when you're catching public transport, if you don't have a ticket, you accrue fines, and those fines go up and up and up, and then make life very, very difficult, let alone if you've got even a petty record of criminal conduct that cancels you out of having the necessary tracks so you can gain certain employment. So all of those system issues need to be addressed, as well as addressing issues within the job system, and particularly before, you know, we see rising costs from $8 billion to what PwC are forecasting to be $19.8 billion in 2040 spent on Indigenous incarceration.
That's massive amounts of money. It's hard to wrap your head around. What about when it comes to the police? Do we suggest that, or is it fair to make the suggestion that there's a level of prejudice and then neglect there, which might lead to these kinds of deaths in custody? Or, I don't know, is it more fueled than that in a very negative sense, or is it maybe just something like inadequate staff training that lead to these fatal consequences, similar to that of, I suppose, Nathan Reynolds, who was administered kind of the, I guess, wrong, I don't know, needs that he needed for his health. He was essentially just having, he had asthma, right? So is this just a lack of staff training, or is there more to it?
There's more to it. And every death has its own particular circumstances and particular things that need to be addressed. But what comes in time and time again is that often the justice responses to these individuals have been incredibly poor. And that can either manifest itself in gross negligence in terms of making sure their health issues are picked up straight away and addressed, which can then prevent their death in custody, or it can be the use of excessive force, which we have seen time and time again. So the issues are far-ranging. The issues hint at what is in the system itself, which is that systemic discrimination, which we need to address desperately before we have another 30 years of our people being locked up, which tears apart culture, community and kin, but also teaches the next generation that that's really all there is for their life. You know, kids can only be what they see. And at the moment, what our kids see is that we're targeted by the system and incarcerated at ever-increasing rates.
It's terrible. Hey, we're going to have to leave it there, Anerita, but thanks so much for joining the show. I do appreciate your time and, giving some insight.
Not a problem. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Thank you. That was Nerita Waite, CEO of the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service, discussing Indigenous deaths in custody in the light of the 30th anniversary of the Royal Commission into it, which will be Thursday this week. If you want to find out more information, you can find links to Nat Sills on our website, which is 2scr.com.